Hey everybody, welcome back to Friends You Can Grow With. I'm your host, Matt Nesbury, and sitting down with me at the table today, two friends that one I've known for several years, one that I'm just now meeting in person, but I've known your children, I'm a big fan of them. So why don't we start by introducing ourselves? This is Anthony Rios here.
Hey Matt, thanks for giving me the opportunity to be with you today. As you said, my name is Anthony Rios. I get the fortunate opportunity to lead our outreach department. I serve as the reach pastor here at the church. I lead a wonderful team of staff members that help us also facilitate all of our First Touch ministries here at the church. You know, we're serving, you know, weekly a couple hundred volunteers that help us do that. Before I started in ministry, I was 15 years at ADT Security as a sales manager, sales leader in sales, regional sales director. So really have some just unique experiences that lend itself to the role that I'm in today, just in community. And so I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And here we have Mr. Shibley. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, thanks. John Shibley, we've been coming to the Ark since, I guess, 2009. And I've been in sales pretty much my whole career for almost 30 years now. And I've been in leadership, various aspects of that. And currently in medical sales on my sixth year. Father of four, been married, been 29 years this year. My kids grew up here at the church, and I'm about to be a grandfather for the first time in a couple weeks. And it's crazy. So yeah. I've done quite a bit of leadership throughout my professional life. I've taught some classes here at the Ark in men's ministry and discipleship and parenting. Yeah, thrilled to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, Matt, John and I actually share that excitement. I will be a grandfather coming up in July. So
that's right.
Leading life in a new way. I think both of us
might have just shifted the topic.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking about what it means to be a grandfather here.
We'll probably get mixed in there eventually.
No. We are going to be talking about a word that both of you said several times, leadership.
Yeah.
And that is a word that is always prevalent nowadays. I think it gets thrown around a lot. And so with any topic, I love to define what we're talking about. So when you hear the word leadership, John, what does that mean to you?
So it's influence. And I believe everybody is capable of leadership. In fact, I think everyone was wired to be a leader of some kind. Now we get to choose how we utilize those gifts. But I think it's primarily serving the people that you lead. I mean, you're only as good as the people that are following you, and then they're really only as good as by which you kind of empower them and educate them and train and coach and love on them. So I think leadership really is serving for the most part, but serving in a way that influences people to get better and be better and stronger and help others. So
Anthony, would you have anything to
tell? I'll disagree with John. I believe that there is a form of leadership in everyone, whether you're leading your family, whether you're leading employees, whether you're leading whatever occupation you're in, there is a form of leadership in everyone, and I'll agree with that. Leadership for me is simply serving others, right? And how do I do that effectively? What do I bring to the table to help facilitate whatever common purpose we are, we're trying to accomplish? I really think that, for me, leadership, I think starting out was, I had this idea that it's about deposits and withdrawals, right? The more deposits that we make in people, the better withdrawals when it comes time to, make a withdrawal that those relative experiences are there and available.
Yeah. So you had almost a transactional view of leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I never really wanted to, give someone an assignment or something that I haven't done, right? I had this idea of leadership was, never allow someone to do something that I won't do. I won't lace up my boots right then and do it with you.
Yeah.
Or this, that I haven't done before, right?
Yeah.
And that's different from, from a ministry perspective into a sales culture. Those are completely different. Trying to find common purpose in a sales team, as John knows, is not the easiest thing, right? Because really at the end of the day, most salespeople, there's one, generally speaking, motivating factor, and that's money, right? And it's very, it's very personal,
right?
And so rallying a sales team around common purpose was something that I certainly had to learn for sure.
Yeah.
For
so
sure.
What made you guys interested in the topic of leadership? Was it something you were thrust into and just kind of had to learn because you were doing it? Or is it something you actually were kind of passionate about and wanted to learn how to do well?
Yeah. Well, I think that was always a goal, just because, to Anthony's point, it's where I saw the income exponentially increase. Mm-hmm. And that's from a professional standpoint. I realized I needed to be in some sort of leadership to get where I wanted to be from an income standpoint. And then as that transpired and kind of progressed, I realized that it's everywhere. And it's all in how we own it and really kind of develop our skills and then kind of, I guess, tactically implement that in our lives with parenting. We're leading our home spiritually, or we should be. Mm-hmm. And then I guess that kind of, as I got older, it felt like the more I looked around, I saw men specifically maybe not taking ownership of that role and the mantle of leadership in their homes and in their communities and their workplace. So I guess I got hungry to be better at that. And so I just started pursuing people that knew a lot more than me, which wasn't hard to find, and started taking mental notes and try to implement that. But ultimately just trying to be the spiritual leader of the home. And that is any man that leads a home. So that's where I got hungry for it. And then just kind of started absorbing more of that.
Yeah. There was almost this divine calling on you that as the man of the house, as the husband, father, there is an aspect of leadership that you just kind of have to grow in and learn.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause you're building little leaders. Yeah. Hopefully, hopefully when you start having a family, that's the way that you look at it.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I would agree with what you said, Matt. I mean, for me, it was, I'd say innate in me. Both of my grandfathers were magistrate judges in the town that I grew up in. Hmm. So leadership, I was sort of thrust into leadership at an early age, just being around them, you know, them being staples in our community, them being involved with, you know, civic government. They were already leaders. So I was fortunate enough to learn from some very strong leaders in my own family that sort of thrusted me into, you know, that leadership role. And then real early on, you know, wanting a desire and a heart to be in ministry, you know, I knew that that was a calling for me, right? Mm-hmm. And I was passionate about pursuing that at every opportunity, you know, serving in my church and that type of thing. The sales piece of me came in similar to John was, you know, once out of Bible school, you know, just wanted to pursue a higher level of income. And then, you know, of course, had the opportunity to rejoin ministry at a high level here at the Ark. So, but I'll agree with you. Ministry was innate in me at a young age. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned how to be a leader, what it meant to be a good leader in your community, what it meant to be a strong leader of your household, and then how to develop and pursue that in a way that's tangible so that people could understand.
Yeah, that's awesome. And John, you made the statement early on when defining leadership, you said leadership is influence. Mm-hmm. Can you go into that a little bit more? What do you mean by leadership being influence?
Yeah, so it's all driven by how we desire others to behave, I guess, and how we can translate what we know into what they know, and then it kind of translates into action. From a professional standpoint, that's how I'm really the context I'm using. So the influence, I mean, you're having it whether you actually realize it sometimes or not by your nonverbal communication, words you speak, examples you set, like you're talking about. It's just kind of a constant, it's not really a moving target, but it is a constant moving entity. So the influence is happening. And I noticed that in parenting too, you know, it's like I can make a gesture and say a lot and I can, you know, say a couple words that really make a big impact depending on how I say it and who I say it to. So I don't know, I guess influence is just this presence of having an impact that directs a behavior or influences a behavior with the people around you. It could be good or bad, and it can be verbal or nonverbal, nonverbal, but people are intuitive enough to pick up on some of that. And we just got to be cognizant of what we're trying to get across and how we say it or do it.
This, to be quite honest, Matt, for me, it was a little bit difficult, right? You know, trying to transition from a sales career into sales leadership, it's not as easy to say, just do it like I did it, right? You know, and it took me a while to figure out how to rally around common purpose and actually teach someone rather than just do it like I did it, right? You know, and so that particular piece of it took me a while to kind of grasp that concept and really more along when I learned it, when I finally realized, hey, let's do it together, right? Let's, you know, leadership for me became a belly to belly type of experience where, whereas some of the leaders that I had before was just do it, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so really had to learn how to develop influence. And really the currency there was just time, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of leaders sometimes make the mistake of ruling with a gun of authority, just do it because I said to do it rather than, hey, let's do it together. So influence took a while for me to, especially being, you know, the youngest, one of the youngest sales managers with the second largest market in our company was hard, right? It's hard to break into that type of a space as a very young leader. So it took me a minute to figure that part out, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and all of us at this table, we're in our 30s. And we've seen the model of leadership change over our life, right? Because it used to be, as you were saying, a very top-down model of leadership, authoritarian, do as I say because I'm the leader.
Right.
But now it has more shifted into influence. Do you guys have any idea what has caused that or led to that? Or have you seen in the corporate world or your time in the corporate world, the benefits of that shift from a top-down to more side-by-side?
Yeah, I mean, I think the motivation is different maybe now because feels like from what I can see that leaders are trying to build leaders and maybe back in the more authoritative model, it was just kind of, I'm going to be here till I die and everybody's below me and we're not trying to really replicate or multiply the team. Nowadays, I think multiplication is a commodity. And I think the more we can, you know, 5 and 10X, right? Scale a business, scale a team, whatever you're trying to do to grow, I think you've got to empower other leaders. I mean, I see it all over the church, right? It's a biblical principle. 2 Timothy 2:2 says, take what I have taught you and teach it to faithful men so they can teach others also. And man, that's kind of answers your question all in a nutshell. And so I think it's about making everybody better so that we can get out and make the team bigger.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. I mean, we saw it, you know. I know all of us at this table for sure have probably read it, almost every leadership book ever written, right? I mean, when coming up, I mean, you know, we can all, there was always 7 rules to leadership or however, you know, however many steps to be a good leader. And I just think as people have evolved, you know, that mindset has somehow changed. It's no longer just content, right? It's no longer just something that you read. It's how do I apply that? You know, how do I really take those principles and put that into a practical way? To like John said, you know, foster growth, right? It's no longer just a, hey, I read the book, check, right? You know, and that's how it was from an authoritative perspective was, hey, if you read these books on leadership, trust me, you're gonna turn out fine, right? You know, and it's really, you know, I think from that perspective has really changed, right?
Yeah.
You know,
do you think part of that is because the younger generations are more relational and needing more of a relational aspect in their work life?
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say, I mean, great point. I was going to say it's from a positional and a relational, two kinds of leadership. One positional is just top down, kind of like I, you know, do as I say. And then relational leadership is really more the one that sticks to me.
Yeah.
Like the one that the other way is just kind of, well, I have to, you know, if you kind of invite others to take ownership of the process and the team and the growth and the vision, then they've got a vested interest, right? They got a stake and skin in the game when you include them, when you bring them along and relationally, and then they're bought in. Then, and when everybody's bought into the same vision and then everybody realizes that the leadership is relational, right? And they want us to win, okay, not just themselves. They want everybody. So I think everybody gets on board with that.
Yeah, it's interesting because it makes me think of an article I read. They talked about the number one reason young people are quitting. It's not to get more money. It's because they didn't feel seen by their direct reports.
Right.
But then you read almost the other side where people are saying, my company says I'm a family, but they don't treat me like family. Mm-hmm. It's this middle ground of how do we come together and form a relationship while still going towards a common goal?
Mm-hmm.
How do you, when you're looking at your team, how do you gauge relationships on that team as far as how much influence you have with certain members and maybe who's needing a little bit more attention than others?
Go ahead.
I mean, I think really for me, it was early on, you know, learning what people's love languages are, and not in a kind of a, you know, weird way, but mm-hmm. just what makes people tick, mm-hmm. right? What is their influences? What can I do to celebrate in their life rather than just, you know, just, hey, you hit a sales goal, or, mm-hmm. hey, we accomplished this goal. Really, what makes you tick? And when I can figure that part out, you celebrate the heck out of those things. Mm-hmm. And a relational leader allows, you know, the rooms to make mistakes, right? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? You know, really, to me, I found beneficial just whether it was just a, hey man, you did an amazing job, or, you know, whether it was whatever it was to celebrate that individual, figure out what makes them tick. And mm-hmm. then once you do that, then you can rally around common purpose and really accomplish some great things.
Yeah.
Agreed. And I'm going to take it from a different perspective, since I don't have necessarily any direct reports now. I had that role at one time, but now I'll relate it to sales and customers and interaction with customers. We're having influence.
Yeah.
And earning trust is a big thing, and even in all aspects of leadership. So in the situation of me and customers and people that I'm trying to build relationship and then gain influence to drive a particular behavior, right? And buy our products. They need to understand that you're there for them, okay? Mm. And it goes back to serving. It always comes back to serving. But earning the trust and gaining the credibility, and then they see that you're in it for them. And so they want to hear what you have to say whenever they know that you actually care about. And I know it's overused, right? Yeah, yeah. People don't care how much you know until they know how much yeah. you care. It's real. It's real in every aspect of life, but specifically in what I do, when I walk in a door and talk to a team of medical professionals, I want them to look at me and go, okay, he's here for us, not him. Mm. Like, they know I get paid on sales, right? But they also get that that's not what drives me. Mm-hmm. So I've earned that trust and credibility and being a kind of a knowledgeable consultant that they see as an element to them winning. Mm. And ultimately their patients getting better care. But that's from a sales standpoint, it's yeah. how that works. Yeah.
What are some good ways to build trust within a team? Maybe if you're new to a team, you're just taking over, or maybe you're new coming on board a team. Mm-hmm. Relationships require a lot of trust. What yeah. are some great ways to build that?
Aside from the obvious of just do what you say you're going to do, I would say listen more and talk less. Hmm. Asking really good questions, get really curious, and then just soak it all up and yeah. learn as much as you can when you're new, right? And then you prove by just shutting your mouth and doing the work. And then they kind of look and like, he doesn't talk much, but he does a lot. And he asks a lot of questions because people want to hear themselves. Like, they want to talk more, mm-hmm. right? And so if you can get them to sort of share with you and make them feel like they're teaching you something, which that's sales too. Mm. Everything relates to that. But no, that's kind of yeah. what I think works. Yeah. yeah.
I mean, for me, is a couple of things. One, you know, don't be the smartest guy in the room on the first week, right? Mm-hmm. You might have an idea of what that is without, you know, you might have some direction or new concepts or thoughts around how to drive business or whatever industry you're in, right? Don't be the smartest guy in the room the first week,
mm-hmm. right? Even if you know the answer, right?
Even if you know the answer, just right? Don't
say. There's play, a really play a, dumb, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, the second one for me probably is just, you know, coming with a sense of humility, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you're new to a team, or, you know, mm-hmm. you're new to an industry, or new to a company, right? I mean, a sense of humility, right? I think that, you know, we can learn that from David, right? He was a talented leader, skilled in battle, right? Flawed, made some mistakes, a mm-hmm. very unique character. But I think one of the things that made him the strongest as a leader was his humility,
great mm-hmm.
right? The mm-hmm. ability to, hey, I messed up, right? I mean, I think some of the most, you know, going back to how do you build influence, the times when I made a mistake, right? And, you know, hey man, I messed up, mm-hmm. you know, forgive me. Mm-hmm. Having a sense of humility and, you know, really transparent in that, rather than just, you know, I don't make mistakes. I'm the boss, or I'm the leader. So therefore mm-hmm. it is this way. A sense of humility can go a long way in leadership.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what are the benefits to having a relational team, a team that works well together and is focused on the goal, whether not that the pay doesn't matter, but there's a higher calling almost, you say the team is connected as opposed to your motivator being make the sale, yeah. make the call, do the task.
You go ahead.
That's a great question, Matt. I mean, because I saw that transitioning from a sales leadership to, you know, obviously in a more of a pastoral role where essentially it is a relational mm-hmm. team, right? You know, but it can be good and bad at times, right? There can be challenges to it where, yes, we have tasks, but hey, we're all friends. We're all on the same team. We do have common purpose. So you mm-hmm. might have a tendency sometimes to relax, right? You know, and I had, again, to try and find balance in that. Hey, when is it go time? When is it a row season? Mm-hmm. And maybe when is it a sales season? But, you know, the benefit of it is, yes, we have common purpose, right? We're all here to further the kingdom. The gifts and talents inside each and every one of us has common purpose. We're here to make disciples. We're here to bless our community. We're here to be a light, right? So having common purpose in that can lend itself to, or the having a good relational team like that can lend itself to moving ministry forward in a significant way.
That's real good. That's well said. I think, as a leader, if you want to create that synergy and kind of that relational dynamic, I think it's important to highlight people's differences. Because sometimes I think we shy from, you know, we kind of run from that and we're all focused on, hey, this is how we're alike and we're all going this way, which, yeah, you cast a vision. But then I think it's important to understand just kind of like, you know, different members of the body, right, of Christ. And so everybody's different. We're aligned differently. We're gifted differently. And so I think as a leader pointing that out, that makes them understand like this machine doesn't work without this part and this part and this, and you have this and you have this and you have this. So I think I wish I'd have maybe done a little better job of that when I was long ago in sales leadership. But hiring against your weaknesses is what you always hear about. Like whatever I'm good at, I want to hire somebody that's good at something different than what I'm good at. So I think that creates a team that's like, well, I mean, just like football teams and sports teams, like not everybody carries the ball, right? So I think it's important to highlight everybody's differences in a way that shows a unity to get to the vision that you've cast.
That's a good point. I mean, I'm a dreamer, big vision, big ideas. But if I don't have people on my team that can execute that vision, then it's just simply that, ideas, concepts, thoughts. You know, if your team, if you can't quickly identify, like John's talking about, the gifts and talents inside of everyone that helps move that team forward, the more of a relational type of a team rallied around a common purpose. If you don't have those types of people, you're just going to simply be that, just a big dreamer, right? Or just big ideas, big thoughts, big concepts.
John, you saying that makes me think, oftentimes in teams, we can highlight our frustrations with others, or they don't think the same as I do. They're not as worried about the details as I am. How do you as a leader flip that on its head? And you're highlighting weaknesses, as you say, or someone else's different strengths. How do you maintain that in a team, making sure people are understanding we're not all the same and that's why we work well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think necessarily we highlight everybody's weakness, but I think we identify strengths, like you were saying, and then you kind of highlight the fact that not everybody has those, but they have these. And so, I mean, it's kind of like a puzzle almost, and you just align those pieces, assuming everything's going the right direction, right? We're moving the ball down the field. I think it's crucial that everyone knows that about each other. And that can get a little, that can get awkward maybe, but I think a good leader calls that out into a meeting and kind of gets everybody input and then says, okay, you're good at that. You're good. And then identifies it. And then realize, and I guess they can embrace it more. Like like you're saying, we're quick to like kind of point when it's a negative situation, but maybe we start pointing at people, hey, you're good at that and I'm not. Let's do this and let's work together here. So I think that is useful, crucial in a team if you want everybody kind of gelling, right? Because not everybody's going to, if you've got a team of everybody that wants to carry the ball, like that's a problem. So you need blocking and tackling.
That's a really good point. I used to think, and I know we've all said this, I don't want to be the leader that's a micromanager. I don't want to be the leader that, you know, has to, my decision is final and I have to be the one that, you know, makes all the decisions. The quicker you can, I think really the success that I've had in ministry, the quicker that you can allow people to have input into whatever you're doing and identify their skill set. How does that help me move the ball forward? The better off you'll be, right? It's not always my idea. Yes, ultimately, I as a leader am responsible for that, but you know, hopefully we've gotten to some collaborative effort here to achieve a common goal, right?
Yeah.
The sooner that you can get to everyone having a piece of the pie to move ministry or whatever industry you're in forward, then the quicker you'll achieve success, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, I can think of early on in my leadership when I wanted to be the Lone Ranger leader, it's all on me. I got to get it done. Mm-hmm. And it was rough to lean on other people, you know, but what are some other mistakes you see young leaders making, or maybe you early on in your leadership made that you wish you had done differently?
Man, it's pretty easy. For some reason, we always, as leaders, pick out, that's the first thing that comes to mind, is things we could have done different. I think probably stop trying to pretend like I had all the answers.
Yeah. Hmm.
Back to the humility a little bit, but I think it was like, I felt like I had to fix everything and had to know everything and couldn't rely on really anybody. Yeah, I could delegate, but ultimately, like you said, I'm accountable. I'm kind of the buck stops with me, but I think I would have been better at leading a group of people if I would have just kind of raised my hand and go, like, I know it says it on my business card, right? But I got no idea here. Anybody? Like, kind of put it out to the team. But I think I tried to feel it out as I go, and I was a first-time manager, right? So I'm like, I'm supposed to know everything, right? So I think that's, and maybe that trickles into parenting too. Sometimes we feel like we're just like, okay, I should know everything. Yeah. Like, I can't not know something. But yeah, I would have probably been more open with some of that transparency, but yeah, that's probably mine.
I really, and just to piggyback on that, I would ask more questions. I would seek out people that have done it before me. As again, as I told you, as the youngest sales, one of the youngest sales leaders in the company, I thought I was the man, right?
Yeah.
And you know, without maybe I was just a little bit the man, but I digress. I would have sought out the people that went before me, right? And I would have talked to managers that were doing it a higher level, way longer than I was, way more seasoned.
Yeah.
So not thinking that you know it all, right? I think was for me, if something I can go back and do it differently. Later in my sales career, I had a manager that was probably the toughest manager I ever worked for. But that's the kind of guy that I needed, right? And I wish I would have been able to seek him out earlier in my career to learn from his experiences, right? You know? And so for me, it's just really just ask more questions. Seek out the people that have done it before you. Don't be afraid to ask questions when you don't know, right?
Yeah.
Or when you're struggling, really. You know, I think I found myself struggling and I can do it, right? Just ask for help. Just ask. Ask more questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, you guys are both fathers. I know you coach a little baseball, right? You have.
It is possibly leading baseball parents is probably the hardest level of leadership. Don knows.
I've coached.
You
baseball,
coach
baseball
the,
parents.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I love this. Because the question I want to know is, are there any outlets or avenues people can seek out to practice their leadership? Maybe coaching was not the right avenue in my mind because I've never coached. But are there any avenues where you think people can reach out and practice their leadership skills where maybe the stakes aren't quite as high as a paycheck?
Go ahead, John. I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I mean, practice leadership. I mean,
wow.
Any sort of, family dynamic for sure. But I mean... any volunteer work, like I am at the church, you can practice leadership if you're involved in some sort of voluntary outreach or, practice, man, that's a good one. Cause I don't know that a lot of teams that want to be practiced on, they want me to refine my leadership at their expense. But no, I think young athletic teams is a great way.
I do too.
Perfect way.
Yeah.
Like that made me a better manager having kids and coaching young people almost made me a better leader of adults, sounds really kind of weird. But I would say get involved in a community of some kind where you're influencing young people. I think.
I would totally agree. I'm, you know, the head coach of my son's baseball team, we used to coach together in Montgomery Little League, and he was on the board. And they were always seeking out volunteers and people to help, right? In those, and it sounds kind of silly, but I mean, you know, if you can lead a group of 8-year-olds or 9-year-olds, then that is certainly, I would qualify that as excellent practice.
Yeah.
If you can manage that. And, you know, it's coaching has taught me a lot about just how you communicate, because you know, there's a lot of coaches, and John and I both know them, that are hammers, right? And hammers do one thing, they hit nails. And not all kids are nails, right? Kids learn differently nowadays. And so coaching has taught me a lot just in just how you communicate with people, because you can't tell a nine-year-old the exact same thing that you tell, you know, an adult, right? And so you got to break the, sometimes break that down. So it's offered me a unique experience, you know, to be able to participate in youth sports. It's a great training ground for sure.
Well, and you mentioned that sports parents are the hardest to lead. Let's talk about that. What do you mean? Why are sports parents
none of the people listening? Exception.
But why are sports parents the hardest to lead?
I mean, for me, really, I think it centers around expectation sometimes, right? I know in my mind, Austin is the best hitter there is. He's the best pitcher, right?
He's going pro.
He is, right? And so I think it's just centers around expectation. They have very strong and passionate ideas around their kids. We all do, right? I mean, I think we're all parents. We should have those.
Right.
And when somebody tells you different in this type of a setting, it can get challenging. And then, you know, just the overall, just working with people, everybody's got an idea on where we should go play this or do that, or, you know, and so it can be a very, I say that, I mean, I love it, but I mean, it is sometimes a challenging group to sort of navigate for sure.
Yep. One word, goggles. The parenting goggles are the biggest problem in sports, I think. And you said it, but we're all protective. I think that's, but I think parents sometimes don't know where to sort of draw the separation of, okay, I trust this coach, back to that word again, trust the leader, that he's got the best interests of my kid and he's going to protect him, that he's going to make him better, you know, and if they could just sort of let it go a little, you know, because that is the biggest challenging, depending on the age, I would say. As they get older, I think the parents are a little less hands-on, you would hope. But it's little Johnny is the best. And a lot of times it's ignorance, because parents don't understand the sport, right? And you said, and that sets bad expectations. So it's mine kid's the best, and he's being wronged in some way. Usually there's a wronging being done.
And I'm fortunate enough, and John actually was, his kid was fortunate enough to play in the same organization as we're in. And so there's really clear expectations of the roles of parents. And so that sort of helps a little bit.
But even still,
you know, reiterating some of those expectations is a daily challenge for sure.
But a lot of life comes down to expectation management as well, right? 100%. You're leading a team of people. They have different ideas. They have different expected outcomes. And you as the leader have to bring those all together and have them settle somewhere on the middle, right? Or hopefully on good ground. How do you as a leader manage the expectations of your team, your clients, your leader? You have these different inputs. How do you keep that all centered?
It's crazy. Go ahead. You want to go first?
I mean, I just think it's sometimes no different than managing a baseball parent, right? You have your own idea of how
you
something...
throw them out of the game.
Yeah, you're out of here, buddy. You know, I think that sometimes it's a little bit of the same way, right? You know, you have a certain idea of how it should be done, right? And yes, I value that opinion. And yes, that's an important part of helping us continue to move the ball forward. However, this is the reality, right? You know, and I think just being able to manage those expectations similar to the same exact way as baseball parents, the better we can do that, you know, the quicker we'll you know, center on common purpose for sure.
I think in a professional environment, I think it's a win looks different to everybody. So I think we need to understand what a win looks like first. Like, to me, a win is different than maybe what my customer views as a win and my boss thinks is a win. So those are different dynamics. But I think if you're leading a team, we need to understand what the greater win is for everybody. And then you can get granular and get real fine about what it is individually. As a leader, you help them get there. But at the same time, I'm trying to manage the big win, right? The big picture. So expectations are, it's kind of a sliding scale because of what someone thinks is a win. And so I personally, with customers, like, make sure I am understanding what a win is to them, because what it is to me may not be the same. And that's going to impact the way that I try to drive influence, way my messaging is, way the what I want to learn about something that helps them. Like, those kinds of things depends on what they view as being a good thing. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the end result for you? Because it's not the same for me, maybe.
Yeah.
So if we verbalize that and get it out on the table, then maybe it is all aligned and we all are going the same way. If we're not, then we figure out how to get those people going in the direction they want to go personally, but also that helps the team kind of maneuver in a positive direction.
That's really good. And how do you communicate that? You mentioned communicating to a 9-year-old is different than a 19-year-old or an adult. And different members on different teams have different communication styles. As a leader, how are you keeping that in mind as you're maybe leading a team meeting or a huddle or a team or group that you have to communicate on several levels to different people in different ways? How do you keep that going?
I mean, for me, I've just learned, even the team that I lead now, you can never communicate enough. That's the first part, right? You can never over communicate something. You know, I used to think that, oh, we have too many meetings or whatever. Like, you know, there's too much just communication, right? And had to rethink that, right? You can never have too much communication. And I think when you can, you know, clearly define, especially for me as a leader who's a dreamer, right? The clearer that I can make the vision plain, if you will, right? Or the whatever we're trying to accomplish or planning for an outreach or whatever we're working on, the sooner and the more clear that I can communicate based on what we're trying to accomplish, the better off we are. But I would say the key is you can never under communicate, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a hard question because it's just so different, because the corporate message could be different than obviously the one-on-one individual development message. But if we're leading a team, and then those obviously the individual happen in private, but I think as a manager leading a meeting of some kind and you're communicating, like, I say make it simple as you can. And then, like you're saying, I think you can make it simple and communicate a lot by checking in different times, like periodically. But for the first sort of directional vision casting, I think we got to just make it simple, like bullet points. Like, let's pick three wins, okay, for everybody. And let's just get everybody's buy-in on these three things. And then as we go and we start developing procedures and processes and framework around that, I think then we like check in with Joe, check in with Bob, whatever, make sure they're aligning their individual goals with that same vision. But you got to check in with the team periodically. I think it's just, like you said, ongoing communication, but I think we got to still try to keep the main thing and keep it bulleted and simple.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We started doing something on our team, like during one of our weekly meetings, we bring the top three or the top five, right? Like what are your top three things? Giving everyone the opportunity to bring something that's important to them that week or that day, or based on whichever tasks were assigned, you know, bring three things that are important to you and let's toss those out, right? So that's a really good point, John.
Yeah. When it comes to leadership and influence, how do you tell the people that you have influence over? Corporately, I feel like it's easier. Vocationally, you can see the team you're on or leading. But in life in general, how do I know who it is that I'm influencing, that I should be looking how I lead this person?
Go ahead,
Jim. Everybody's being influenced by you in some way. Like maybe not in that very moment, but I think it could be down the road. Like something they saw you do or say could be affecting them and influencing them somewhere else, and you may never see it. So I think you got to keep a very laser focused view on the seeds you're sowing on a daily basis, because I think they may be happening when you don't realize it. Specifically, directly, the team that we're leading, obviously we know we're influencing them because we're interacting on a regular basis, but I think it's the people that you interact with the most, clearly. And then I think it's just knowing, even kind of on a peripheral thing, like where the seeds are going, like what seeds are you sowing by the look, the action, the body language, the word, the example. I just feel like you're always influencing in some way, but you got to be cognizant of kind of what those seeds are doing and who, because you may never know who's watching.
Yeah.
So you got to assume everybody is.
Yeah.
That's really good. I mean, this has been hard for me at times, right? For example, you know, I would agree with John that influence is everywhere. Yes, our direct reports, or if you will, or the people we work with on a daily basis, mm-hmm. they're with us, right? We're locked in arms. We're in battle together. I think it's the people around, like, for example, the hundreds of volunteers that my department supports on a weekly basis. You know, I think it was, I forget who says this, but they're either feeling ripples or waves, right? You're in the, you're rowing a certain way. The people around you are either feeling ripples or waves. You're doing one or the other, mm-hmm. right? Are we splashing all over them, or are they you know, feeling our influence in a way that is, you know, helping them, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think when you have that perspective, I remember getting some feedback that I, you know, should walk through our lobbies a little less busy, right? Or a little, mm-hmm. I mean, we've got a lot going on, right? On any given week. You know, that my influence is people, right? And I need to take the time, and even if there's a million things going on in my head, mm-hmm. to take the time to, you know, say hi to people and, you know, realize that my influence just isn't the people that I lead, mm-hmm. but it's everyone around you. It mm-hmm. really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Growing up, did you guys have a leader that really poured into you, that mentored you and helped you along in your journey?
I had... My dad was always around, and my dad was very engaged, worked hard, but was very, he was a, you know, kind of a strong, like stern disciplinarian, because, you know, he's a former Marine. He was a baseball coach at my high school. And so had my dad in my high school the whole time. So, he was always just never afraid to like show affection. Like he mm-hmm. just kind of modeled to me what being tough and then kind of being tender and soft sometimes when you need to be. So I learned a lot about leadership from, and I watched people respond to him. That was the other thing too, is maybe it wasn't directly to me, but I'd watch kind of how people respected him and how he carried himself. And so, yeah, I learned a lot about integrity and about honor and about my word and what that meant and doing what you say you're going to do. So my dad, I would probably say, if I had to pick one.
Yeah, even his interactions with others mm-hmm. had influence on you,
right?
Just as a third party watching. Yep. That's so interesting.
Yeah, I would agree. My dad, for sure, played an influential part in the leadership of, or in, you know, me growing as a leader, as well as, I told you, both my grandfathers served as magistrate judges. So there mm-hmm. was oftentimes there was a lot of pressure being, you know, a Rios in my hometown, because that name kind of carried a little bit of a weight, right? Mm-hmm. You know, both my grandfathers were very well known in our community. And so, you know, it was sometimes a bit challenging, right? Mm-hmm. You know, everybody knows you.
Yeah.
You know, you know, they walked into restaurants and would get their meals paid for them. And, you mm-hmm. know, and so they, it was that type of learning lessons. For sure. And just watching them, along with my dad, you know, worked 30 years for the state of New Mexico, watching them really lead their families in unique ways, both in their jobs, but in ministry. Both my parents were involved in church. Mm-hmm. My mom was the church secretary, right? And so just watching them kind of interact in that level was instrumental to my development as a leader, for sure.
Yeah. So it sounds like both your mentors, your leadership mentors, being your fathers and your grandfather.
Yeah.
Their leadership life really, in your aspect, was at home a lot of the time, mm-hmm. where you saw them, interacted with them, and it started maybe at home. Mm-hmm. As a father, how do we lead our family well?
Man.
Talk about an open-ended question. No, right?
I mean, I have a feeling what he's going to say, and I don't want to steal his thunder.
No, go ahead.
But I think
steal it.
It's got to be biblically foundational. Yeah. In the beginning, like it has to be that our leadership starts and ends there. And it's really about having grace at the same time as kind of having the disciplinarian side and creating boundaries. Mm-hmm. But I think there's got to be some grace. So it's a rough recipe to figure out sometimes, mm-hmm. but, our leadership at home starts and ends with spiritual leadership. And that goes, like, we're leading our wives too, but with our kids, they have to see, and our words have to align with our actions. Mm-hmm. We can't just be talking about it. We got to be about it. So, mm-hmm. And they see right through it. They see right through it if you're not aligned.
Yeah. I would agree 100%. To be honest with you, Matt, this is, an area that I haven't always gotten right, you know, and thankfully have a loving wife who's gracious enough to check me when I need to. And, you know, haven't always been, you know, and I remember now that you brought that up, you know, how are you the one of the best sales managers of the company, and, you know, we're having these challenges at home. You're a great leader, mm-hmm. right? And I just can remember that so vividly, and really having to allow the Lord to work on that in me to really understand it. Yes, before all of that, I am the head of this household, right? This is my number one priority, not, you know, being the best guy, right? You know, and so that was an area that I really had to learn and still continue to do. I mean, you know, and I learn a lot from my kids. I learn a lot from experiences that we've had together, you know, and it's really, I remember a few years ago, I was challenging my faith. Many of you know, I broke my ankle and that was a challenging time because I'm such a, you know, hands-on go-getter, you know, and so I'll never forget, Alyssa was going through something in her body and I was upset, my ankle not healing right. And, you know, it was hot as the blazing sun, the middle of the summer, my sprinklers are messed up, my grass is dying, and I'm in the garage and I'm just in my own emotion, right? And Austin's there with me and I'm just mad, you know, and I'm like, gosh, you know, got all this stuff going on and I'm upset. And Austin, you know, says, Dad, we can pray that it'll rain, right? And immediately the Lord just snapped me back. And I said, you know what, son, you're right. We can pray, you know, and, we prayed, and one of those days where there's not a cloud in the sky. And I'm like, Lord, please just let it rain. Mm-hmm. And thankfully that evening it rained. And it was really just an example of, I'm still growing in this thing, right? Yeah. I'm still, but my kids and my family teach me every day, you know, and they, like John said, they can see it, and they can see it when it's fake and they know when it's genuine. And so that's been a highlight of our family for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leadership seems like one of those mountains you never summit. You just keep learning and learning more.
And I can, I speak about some of these things because I've been on the other side of what great sounds like. Like I can verbalize it now because I watched the cautionary tale that I was, right? Oh. And so thankfully I kept notes, and I think that's what God wants is just progress, right? He just wants learners and seekers. And so I'm like trying to be better, and I've been in the place where they're like, Dad, you mentioned something about we shouldn't like judge our classmates, but that guy you just that went by and did what he did, you kind of sound like you're judging. I'm like,
no comment. Kids will remind you of that stuff.
Yeah, they really will.
They're good at that.
You know, and I think getting back to what you said about never getting to the summit, you know, having been in a position where a lot of the leaders that I served under, they weren't good leaders, you know, but being able to make it through those times, right? And just knowing that you got to get something from every stop, right? I mean, I had some early on in my career, some, you know, it was really tough, you know, they weren't the best, right? You know, and so, but they're my leader, right? We have to support them. It's my responsibility to do the very best that I can in that situation. But learning every step, you know, and just knowing that it's never something you get to, you know, check off, like I'm done, right? I'm done growing as a leader, I think is important that you always maintain.
Yeah, I think that's great advice for any young leader starting out. John, do you have any, if you were a young leader listening to this podcast, what advice would you want to hear?
I think, well, maybe they don't want to hear it, but this is something that I wish somebody would have told me. Is lead before you are the leader, like lead before you have the title, lead before you feel qualified. Yeah. Like, because if you're leading with the right heart and you're not like, and you are servant leader, it's not going to come across that you're stepping on toes or you're out of place. But we got too many people sitting on the side going, well, I haven't been given my shot, so I'm just not a leader. Or, yeah, well, they're doing it and they're doing it wrong. Like, I think we got too many kind of sideline coaches. Yeah. I think we need people to get in the game, figure it out as you go. You're going to make mistakes. But lead before it says it on your business card, or lead before someone calls you that. You know, because ultimately God has created us to do that and to have influence and serve. Start by serving, but understand that you are capable of it before you're ever given that like title.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Man, that's so good, John. I mean, I'll just double down on that. I was talking with someone a young leader just the other day, and I was encouraging him, just stack days in leadership, mm-hmm. right? Just yeah. use every opportunity to continue to grow. There's not a book on how do I get from point A to point B.
Right.
Just stack days in leadership. Just mm-hmm. learn in every opportunity you can how to be an effective leader. And one day we'll look up and who knows where you'll be, mm-hmm. right? From a leadership perspective. You know, I would agree 100% with what John said. Lead before it's on the business card. Mm-hmm. Lead before your name's on the door. Mm-hmm. You know, lead from behind. Lead, you know, grind in obscurity if you have to, yep. right? You know, but always keep in mind and know that the Lord's got you. You're mm-hmm. you're in the right spot. And that when you stack days, you know, sometimes my team, they make fun of me because I don't remember anniversaries and those type of things, because to me, it's just ministry. It's mm-hmm. just leaders. It's just time, right? There really is no, you know, in my mind, concept of how long we're going to do this, right? Mm-hmm. You know, just stack days as a leader. Just mm-hmm. be a good leader and stack days.
That's good. Awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, John, Anthony, thank you guys both so much for being on the podcast. It was super refreshing for me to hear from two young leaders about
Amen.
How I can improve as a leader. And I hope it was helpful to our audience. I know that there was a lot of good gold nuggets in that. So thank you guys both very much for being on the podcast. And thank you for listening. And we hope you'll join us again on Friends You Can Grow With.